This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The United Nations has expressed alarm about reports that over 250 African migrants have perished, feared drowned in the Mediterranean on Thursday.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Details next.
Also today marks World Tuberculosis Day, aimed at raising awareness of a disease that kills an estimated 1.8 million people every year. And former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak is out of the hospital and back home.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
There's been another migrant boat tragedy on the Mediterranean. Hundreds of Africans are feared drowned. A Spanish aid organization says two dinghies were found capsized. Such vessels typically hold about 100 migrants. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following migrant developments. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The United Nations has expressed alarm about reports that over 250 African migrants have perished, feared drowned in the Mediterranean on Thursday after a rescue boat found at least five bodies close to rubber dinghies off the coast of Libya. Now, the UNHCR says 6,000 people have been rescued just in the last 5 days, and almost 22,000 now since the beginning of January on this route. But this is of great concern, this particular tragedy, because it's difficult to tell how many people were actually crammed onto what are believed to be two dinghies that submerged off the coast of Libya near Sabratha, about 15 miles off the coast. They were discovered by a Spanish NGO, Proactiva Open Arms, and they're trying to discover what really happened, but of course it's very difficult when you can't find the bodies.
Josephine, it's now the spring. Can you give us an idea of how soon sea conditions improve on the Mediterranean? Because the migrants are starting to come over to Italy in increasing numbers.
Well, what's incredible is we haven't seen much of a slowdown. Despite the incredibly rough winter weather and strong winds, high seas, migrant departures from Libya have been continuing and have indeed accelerated in the first couple of months of the year. Now, that's expected to continue. The Italian government has revised upwards the numbers that it's expecting this year. We may see up to 250,000.
Josephine, can you tell us what the latest is on the legal agreement between Italy and Libya? I understand there's a problem with it, according to a Libyan court.
Yes, the Libyan Herald, a local newspaper, is reporting that a court there has blocked an agreement aimed at stopping the flow of migrants from the North African country across the Mediterranean. As we know, Italy, backed by the EU, is looking to provide extra security support, boats for the Libyan Coast Guard and training. But this seems to have been stalled, and there's a complaint from a former justice minister and a few others saying that this agreement has to go through the Libyan parliament before it can take effect. Now, that's going to be of concern, particularly this weekend, as the EU leaders come to Rome to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, which established the European Union. And immigration is such a big issue for Europe. Italy wants to show the EU that it is taking action, particularly to stop this flow of migration, to try and tackle the people smugglers. That looks like it's overshadowing this meeting at the weekend.
Now, I understand also that the Italian Senate has launched an inquiry into the role that NGOs are playing with the migrants. What's going on?
The push for an inquiry has come from a Sicilian prosecutor, Carmel Zuccaro, who is at the front line dealing with people smuggling and migrant rescues, and he has pushed for the Italian Senate to launch an inquiry into the role of NGOs, because as we've seen, there's a debate going on, a very vibrant debate, suggesting that NGOs are actually promoting the wave of immigration that we're seeing across the Mediterranean. And this inquiry is being strongly pushed by the anti-immigrant Northern League Party in Italy and the right-wing Forza Italia Party of Silvio Berlusconi, the former Prime Minister. This will be interesting to see how it plays out.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Today marks World Tuberculosis Day, aimed at raising awareness of a disease that kills an estimated 1.8 million people every year. Just six countries account for nearly two-thirds of the cases: India, Indonesia, China, Nigeria, Pakistan, and South Africa. As Henry Ridgewell reports, resistant forms of the TB bacteria already are undermining efforts to roll out new treatments.
Tuberculosis, or TB, is the most deadly infectious disease in the world. World TB Day aims to highlight the burden carried by some of the most marginalized communities.
Dr. Mario Raviglione is the WHO's Global Tuberculosis Program Director.
Every single day, 5,000 people lose their life because of tuberculosis. And TB hits particularly those vulnerable populations that include migrants, refugees, prisoners, people who are marginalized in their societies.
TB is rife in African townships like Khayelitsha near Cape Town, South Africa, one of the largest and fastest growing communities in the country. In recent years, drug-resistant strains of TB have taken hold around the world, posing an increasingly urgent public health threat. These strains often go undetected and are spread across populations. Dr. Kirtan Deda, head of the Division of Pulmonology at the nearby University of Cape Town, spoke to VOA via Skype.
South Africa, for example, TB is the commonest cause of death, and the disease is out of control in Africa.
But there is new hope. A small number of new drugs have become available.
For the first time after about 4 to 5 decades, we have two drugs. One is called bedaquiline that has now been registered in South Africa and is available to treat mainly patients with drug-resistant TB. And there's another new drug called delaminid that is not yet licensed in South Africa but is available in other countries.
In a report published in the Lancet Medical Journal, Deda and his co-authors warned that the effectiveness of these new drugs could be lost if they are not used correctly and dispensed quickly.
We need to change our strategy. We need to go out into the community and find these cases. We have to address the major drivers of TB, which is poverty and overcrowding, nutritional deprivation, alcohol abuse, cigarette smoking, and biomass fuel exposure.
Authors of the report say the new drugs must be prescribed as individually targeted treatments with clear dosing guidelines to prevent further resistant TB strains from emerging. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The UN Security Council was briefed yesterday on the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, including famine in parts of Unity State. But while council members agree that the situation is getting worse, there was a difference of opinion on the driving factors behind it. Ayan Buor has more on the story.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned Security Council members Thursday that the humanitarian crisis continues to deepen, that 100,000 South Sudanese are affected by famine, another 1 million are on the verge of famine, and more than 5 million may be severely food insecure by this summer.
Despite the alarm sounded by the United Nations and the international community over this crisis, the government has yet to express any meaningful concern or take any tangible steps to address the plight of its people. On the contrary, what we hear most often are denials, a refusal by the leadership to even acknowledge the crisis or to fulfill its responsibilities to end it.
Ambassador Joseph Moam Majak Ngor Maluk, the UN representative from South Sudan, assured the council that his government would cooperate with the UN to resolve the issues affecting his country. He also claimed that changing weather patterns are largely to blame for South Sudan's food insecurity issues, while categorically denying his government purposefully starved certain people, leading to the famine in parts of former Unity State.
The government takes issue with accusation that it is responsible for it. It is also important to note that other parts of the country affected by drought as a result of climate change.
Russian Deputy UN Ambassador Peter Iachev agreed with Moam's assessment, telling the council that the famine was, quote, linked not just to problems with security, but also with inclement weather conditions, end quote. Michelle Sisson, the U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN, was quick to shoot down that assertion.
The famine is not a result of drought. It is the result of leaders more interested in political power and personal gain than in stopping violence and allowing humanitarian access.
Sisson says the South Sudanese government's continued and unconscionable impediments to humanitarians trying to reach famine-stricken populations may amount to deliberate starvation tactics. She told council members the option for an arms embargo is still on the table.
Our unanimously adopted sanctions resolution gives us the ability to designate individuals whose actions or policies threaten peace in South Sudan, including those who obstruct the activities of international peacekeeping or humanitarian missions, those whose actions or policies expand the conflict, and those who engage and targeting of civilians, including women and girls.
Boris Johnson, the United Kingdom's foreign secretary, told council members that just last month, the brutal cycle of raiding, retaliation, and counter-retaliation drove an estimated 80,000 people to flee their villages. He added that the hybrid court, as agreed to in the peace agreement, must be established so that those responsible for atrocities and other crimes can face justice.
And we should acknowledge that a terrible failure of political leadership lies behind the bloodshed. At every level, we must therefore place pressure on the leaders of South Sudan, both in government and in opposition, to act in the best interests of their people.
UN Women notes that the majority of South Sudan's displaced populations are made up of women, girls, and children. Betty Sunday, coordinator of the Women's Monthly Forum on Peace and Political Process on South Sudan, used her time to remind council members of the ongoing crimes committed against South Sudanese women.
If the peace agreement was implemented, women could go about their life without fear. Their children could go to school and they can collect food and intended to go to the garden.
Secretary General Guterres informed the council that the government continues to impede access to humanitarians delivering life-saving assistance, adding that the peace remains at a standstill. He said an inclusive political process is a crucial aspect to moving the country forward. As for the national dialogue, President Salva Kiir announced late last year, Guterres had this to say.
Credible dialogue cannot take place at the point of a gun. When civil society and opposition members cannot meet or speak freely, when a significant proportion of the population cannot participate in the discussions, and when numerous communities are displaced or facing starvation, dialogue efforts are unlikely to succeed.
In December, a U.S.-led resolution to implement an arms embargo on South Sudan failed to pass. Since then, reports say South Sudanese refugees have poured into neighboring countries as insecurity has spread to previously peaceful parts of South Sudan. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hei Suhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Hundreds of Africans are feared drowned in the latest migrant boat tragedy on the Mediterranean. And today marks World Tuberculosis Day, aimed at raising awareness of a disease that kills an estimated 1.8 million people every year. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says more than 6 million people in Somalia are facing some level of acute food insecurity, with nearly 3 million at risk of famine between now and June. The FAO is scaling up its activities in drought-affected regions of Somalia and has implemented its Famine Prevention and Drought Response Plan. The plan combines life-saving interventions with emergency livelihood support in rural areas. Patrick Jackson is Program Team Leader for Emergency and Rehabilitation Activities for the FAO. He spoke with me about what they are doing to save the lives of millions of people.
Our interventions are twofold. We are prioritizing life-saving interventions, meaning cash for work activities or unconditional cash distribution to ensure that the people very quickly have the possibility to get access to food and water. And we have also livelihood support interventions, like, for example, what we are calling cash plus. It's a distribution of cash associated with distribution of farming inputs or fishing equipment, as well as interventions aiming at securing the livestock populations, like treatment, like water trucking, like mineral blocks, to ensure that the livestock will go through this very difficult period.
So I guess this is part of your implementation of your Famine Prevention and Drought Response Plan. So looking ahead in the months to come, do you see this is going to help improve the situation?
Yes, it is going to enhance the situation. We have been already receiving 60 million to really quickly implement activities. Our target is to receive 160 million, reach 1 million individuals that we are targeting on our cash interventions, and 3 million people which would benefit from our livestock-related interventions. So altogether, 4 million individuals to avoid deterioration of the food security situation.
Do you think the rest of the international community is responding as urgently as they should be?
In a way, yes. We have been receiving commitment extremely quickly over the last 4 weeks, and that's what enabled us to have access to the support from the SERF. There is a lot of other crises going on, like in Nigeria, like in South Sudan, which is putting the development community in a difficult position, as there are so many crises going on at the same time, which represent a real challenge.
That's Patrick Jackson. He's Program Team Leader for Emergency and Rehabilitation Activities for the Food and Agriculture Organization. He spoke with me from Accra, Ghana. In other news on Somalia today, a car bomb near the presidential palace killed one person and wounded two others. Al-Shabaab militants are suspected.
Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak is out of the hospital and back home. The Associated Press quotes an unidentified security official as saying Mubarak left the Armed Forces Hospital in the Cairo suburb of Mahdi this morning. He is now at his house in the upscale district of Heliopolis. Mubarak, who's 88, has been in the military hospital since 2013 after being transferred from Tora prison. Earlier this month, Egypt's highest appeals court ordered his release after exonerating him in the deaths of hundreds of protesters in 2011.
Zimbabwe's political problems have inspired many clerics to criticize government policies. Reporter Kuzazi Zvinavashi tells us about one bishop who's speaking out.
Zimbabwe Divine Destiny, a collective organization of various church leaders, has called for a peaceful presidential election in 2018. Its leader, Bishop Anselimo Magaya, who is visually impaired, explains.
We would like to inform the nation that the forthcoming elections can only be different if we all vote freely, in peace, but more importantly, with godly conscience, which behooves us select leadership on godly principle basis.
Magaya describes problems that prevail in the country.
Our nation has no economy but vestiges of an economy. There is no local currency to talk of. And the reason is very clear. We have killed our economy. There is no need to smokescreen it any longer by sanctions, excuse. Chief of cause among the agents of economic destruction is corruption and bad governance that rewards thievery and ineptitude, yet punishing honest and integrity.
He suggests following godly principles would have kept the nation at its peak.
If we had managed our resources prudently, exercising good governance with godly fear that forbids reaping from where one did not sow, and the genuine love for fellow citizens, Zimbabwean economy could have awakened with industries revived.
The bishop says the church will be heard in the 2018 elections.
It is against this background that the Christian church, which has the majority of the populace, are saying it's not going to be voting as usual come 2018. The church must, as of necessity, reserve the right to determine who presides over the political office of this nation.
Magaya says politicians' qualifications must be examined.
How credible and impeccable is one's conduct? This time around, we're going to check. What is it that one is known for? What is it that this party is known for? What is it that this group of people are known for? What value does one stand for? What is their past record? The paradigm indeed has changed. Gone are the days when politicians lie through their teeth.
In the past, the religious sect has existed without critiquing the governance of the country. But that has changed in the past year. More clerics are speaking out against the government. Magaya says Zimbabwe, being largely a Christian nation, will see Christians choosing the next leader. Zimbabwe Divine Destiny is running a campaign called The Christian Vote. The goal is to create awareness around the elections and evaluate prospective leaders. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hundley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there.
VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Get ready this Sunday for an exciting hour of African music and music news. I've got the hottest hip-co from L.I.B., supreme Saharan rock from Niger, and a fantastic interview with Rocky Dawuni, Ghana's Afro-roots reggae king. We were together in Zanzibar in February, and let me tell you, Rocky gives an amazing interview. There's more, too, but I'm out of time. So just trust me, peeps. You're gonna love it. Tune in to VOA Africa's FM station Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Yeah!
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 20 million people are suffering from a hunger crisis. An in-depth discussion on the international call for action on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.